Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week, each Friday, I am honored to share the microphone with the most interesting people. These are people who are entrepreneurs, authors, speakers, small business owners, virtual assistants, physicians, and truly anyone who has wonderful stories to share and who are excited to freely share their business wisdom as well as tips and actionable advice with their audience. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. And today I'm excited. I get to welcome Dr. Michelle Summers Colon to the show. We were actually in a mastermind together, and I've been following her around for quite a bit. She is a physician, surgeon, health coach, yoga teacher, anatomy instructor, author, and overall health and wellness expert. She is known as the holistic podiatrist of Southern California and has been interviewed and quoted in many prominent publications, including USA Today, U.S. News and World Reports, Health Magazine, Yahoo, Makers, and Bloomberg Businessweek. One of her greatest strengths is her ability to help women create balanced, healthy lives by looking at the whole picture. And that's why I'm so excited to have her on today. As entrepreneurs, too many of us tend to just kind of go, I'll exercise later. Right now I've got to deal with my client, or I've got to get this website launched. You may see my hand waving in the air. I am so guilty. So I'm actually going to be listening to her very, very carefully today so I can take in some tips and make sure that I'm moving properly and eating and drinking properly so I can create the business that I need to create and continue running it. So, Michelle, welcome to the show. I'm so glad to have you here.
Thank you, Denise. I'm really happy to be here.
Listen, you are a busy gal. I mean, I was breathless just reading all of that.
Thank you. Yes, I do tend to stay pretty busy.
So today, well, before we get started, I mean, this didn't all just happen overnight, clearly. So do you mind kind of sharing with the audience how you got started down this path?
Sure. I've been a physician in the Los Angeles area for 19 years. I just had my 19-year anniversary this month. And I've also been studying holistic medicine, Ayurveda, and yoga over the past several years and incorporating that into my practice with my patients so that I can treat them in a more holistic way. And that's shown to be very beneficial for my diabetic patients and a lot of my other busy moms and busy entrepreneur patients. I also started a shoe company in 2012, so I've been working on that. And the goal for that company was just to create beautiful shoes that are still comfortable for women. So I have a lot of busy business women in my community and in my practice that were complaining about their shoes. And so I created that business, and I am now running groups and coaching people online in different ways how to get healthier and how to really heal themselves using their own body's wisdom and their own knowledge that, you know, I could share with them my knowledge so they start healing themselves naturally and get off of the cycle of being on prescriptions in the way that medicine is these days.
I think medicine is incredibly dangerous, to be honest with you. If you come into my house and you get sick, you get Tums, unbuffered aspirin, or cider vinegar. That's it. That's pretty much all there is in the house.
Yeah, that's so great that you guys aren't, you know, in that model of right away getting prescriptions, because so many people are in that mode. And I just want to teach people how they can used foods and just different lifestyle changes to get healthier without having to go the other route.
You know, I have observed this as I get older, but when I was a kid, people weren't sick. They just weren't. I mean, people were healthy. They were fairly slim. They ate proper foods. And I term proper foods as whole foods and foods that you cook at home. I think I posted something on Facebook yesterday. It was, I believe it was National Junk Food Day. I don't think that's something to celebrate. My attitude is, if your food is being delivered to you or served up to you from a box, you're better off licking the picture than throwing the box in the trash.
It's so true. Like you said, there were so many people that were not sick when we were kids. And now my patients are coming in with side effects from their other medications, and we're having to treat the side effects, you know, from the other medications. That should tell people something. So, yeah, it's definitely a big problem these days.
Well, I'm a big believer that if you eat properly, and, you know, I don't think you have to ascribe to any particular diet or fad, but if you eat as many whole and organic foods as you can and drink a bunch of water and obviously move your body around, you're going to just naturally be healthier.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that, like, pretty much everyone kind of knows that in the back of their mind. If you eat well, exercise, and get enough sleep, that you're going to be healthy. But the problem is that people aren't doing it, right? Especially in our businesses,
right,
where we see a lot of entrepreneurs, they're staying up all hours of the night working on their business, and they're just really getting into a cycle of really bad habits really quickly.
Listen, I admit that I do that. I'm just going to call myself a high-functioning workaholic because it sounds good. It's probably not true, but I am a workaholic. And I, you know, my office is in my home, so it's very easy for me to get on a roll. And at 1 o'clock in the morning, I'm going, oh, geez, I might need to go to sleep now. So trust me, I'm there. So I guess my question on that point is there anything that people like me who are high-functioning workaholics and who are A-type personalities, what can we do to kind of decompress, say, 9 o'clock at night instead of 1 o'clock in the morning? Are there some things that we can do to say, okay, back it up, go get your jammies on, wash your face? You know, how do you help people like me who don't know when to stop?
Yeah, that's a great question, because one of the first things that I address when I'm working with clients is their sleep habits and their sleep patterns. And so getting people back into the rhythm of nature and the circadian rhythm and going to sleep at the right time of night and waking up at the right time of the morning gives you so much more energy the next day, and people don't realize that. So we try to aim for a 10 o'clock hour for going to sleep, and I know that sounds really hard for a lot of people that stay up late trying to get things done at the end of the day, but
for going to sleep or for starting the process, because I don't think I've been to sleep at 10 o'clock ever.
Yeah, for lying down, let's say lying, you know, try to get
okay.
to bed at
okay.
that hour. And so there's a lot of things to do to actually get to that point, but you really have to start earlier in your day when you're planning to go to bed earlier. So let's say, for example, you're going to plan to go to bed at 10, you have to start shutting down all of your electronics, your cell phone, your computer, all the stuff that's giving you that stimulating light an hour before bed. So if you're going to plan to go to bed at 10, you have to start shutting down at 9. Okay, so if you don't shut down till midnight, you're not really going to fall asleep probably till 1 because your brain's too stimulated. And then even going back further, we have to look at what time are we eating dinner, because our food needs time to digest before we go to bed. If we go to bed on a full stomach, we're going to not sleep well. We're going to wake up in the morning feeling heavy or groggy. And so we really have to look at our meal times the day before when we're thinking about our energy the next day. So if we're aiming to go to bed at 10, shutting down our electronics at 9, we have to try to aim to eat our dinners around 6 o'clock. So there's a lot that goes into it.
Really, 6 o'clock, honestly? Okay, I don't do that, so I'm going to have to really look at that. I tend to eat on the fly, which I know is a very bad thing. I mean, I totally get that. I tend to eat when my stomach goes, oh, hey, you know, I don't have any set times for meals. So by the time I get to there, I'm pretty hungry. It's not that I overeat, but by then I'm headachy and I'm probably feeling a little bit queasy. So I'm guessing just by listening to myself, not a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, it is good to listen to your hunger, to listen to your own body when you're hungry, but I think a lot of us are probably pushing it a little too far and waiting till we get those headaches and those, you know, nauseous feelings and stuff, when really our hunger was probably talking to us a little sooner and maybe we weren't listening. So one way to start doing that is to start getting on a regular meal, meal times. So it kind of trains your body that you're going to be hungry at 5 or 6 and you're going to be hungry around noon for your lunchtime. So in the beginning, it seemed a little different because maybe you don't feel that hungry, but once you get into a rhythm of it, maybe say after a week or two, your body's going to start realizing, oh yeah, it's time for me to be hungry. It's time for us to eat. And then you will start feeling that.
And that makes sense. And, you know, when I was married and, you know, had somebody else in the home that I had to pay attention to, we had regular meal times. I've been single for a good long while and I will remain single. It's just who I am. I'm not going to do that again. But I tend to just do what I want when I want, and I'm realizing that that's probably not the best course of action. Now, I will say that I drink a lot of water. Water is always my go-to beverage. I love the taste of water. So I pay attention when I can tell instantly when I'm getting thirsty, but I'm not nearly as aware of when I'm getting hungry. So I will start scheduling, and I'll let you know. I'll start scheduling a meal. But all that to say, I wanted to ask you about breakfast, because I hate breakfast. Hate it, hate it, hate it. Don't like it, don't eat it, can't keep it down. So for people who, like me, who basically eat 2 meals a day, is there something that we should do in terms of scheduling for that?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question, because there are a lot of people that don't like eating breakfast. And then that old saying of breakfast is your most important meal of the day, actually, in Ayurveda, that's not really what we believe. We believe lunch is our most important meal of the day, because it's when the energy is at its peak for the day in terms of the circadian rhythm and the rhythm of nature, and we want to eat at the peak time of day, so that would be around noon. So what we try to do is have people eat their biggest, heaviest meal of the day around their lunchtime hour and eat something light for breakfast, and then again eat something light for dinner. So that's when you're looking at 3 meals a day. But when you're talking about some people like you that don't like to have breakfast or just aren't hungry in the morning for breakfast, and they go with the 2-meal-a-day plan, that's perfectly fine for certain people. And for those people, we try to have them eat. So instead of eating breakfast at 8 and lunch at 12, they would eat in the middle. So like a brunch, they would have that around 10. And then they might even want to have their dinner a little bit earlier, because they start getting hungry maybe around 4 or 5 instead of 6. So you can kind of play with your dinner time a little bit depending on how much you eat for your brunch. But that's what you can do so that you can have those 2 meals a day.
I'm going to have to do some, you know what I'm going to have to do, Michelle? I'm going to have to follow myself around for the next few days and find out what time, you know, what time frame that it is that I get hungry in mornings, mid-afternoon. I'm finding it's typically around 1 in the afternoon. I mean, that's what I think it is. I will follow myself around and jot it down. But so for me to eat, just 4 hours apart, 4 or 5 hours apart, that's going to be tough for me. So I'm going to have to probably move it back to, say, 11 or 12. I'm going to have to schedule that. I promise you, it's going to have to go in my calendar.
Yeah, you might start scheduling it and then seeing, you know, how you feel. See if there's changes in the way you're feeling and the way you're sleeping and the way you feel when you wake up in the morning, when you start changing your meal times a little bit.
Well, it'll be interesting, because I'm typically up right at the crack of dawn or before. So I've been up almost a full day by the time I get hungry. I don't even know if that's normal, but that's just the way it's always been for me, so I don't argue with it.
Yeah, and if you're drinking a lot of water, a lot of times when people that snack, for example, a lot of times between meals when they snack, they feel something and they think it's hunger. And a lot of times it's actually thirst, you're grabbing food. And so what I do with those people is I have them just drink water between their meals. And so as soon as you have that urge to grab a snack, grab your water bottle. You can have flavored water if you want by adding ginger or lemon or different fruits to the water. And have water every time you feel that need to grab a snack or to grab food when you're between your meals. And so it could be because you're drinking so much water throughout the morning that you're just not feeling hungry because you're full from the water. And if that works for you, and if you're having your two meals, that's perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you brought up flavored water because I know people who really do not like water. I have a friend who drank Diet Dr. Pepper. I mean, she would walk into the office in the morning. This was back many years ago when I still had a job, when I was employable. I have rendered myself unemployable because now I will only work for myself. But she would walk into the office at 7 o'clock in the morning with a Diet Dr. Pepper and always wondered why she had urinary tract infections and bladder infections and didn't feel good. And I remember one day a couple of us had an intervention and we really tried to get her to drink some water. I can't even describe the face that she made. It was hilarious, but she actually had to go throw up. She did not want that water. I went, oh my gosh. So that taught me right then and there that there are people who simply do not like water and they would rather have a fizzy drink or a soda or something. So what do you say to those people? Put the can down? I mean, how do you help them?
Yeah, I definitely give them different examples of different ways they can make their water taste great. Like, I love putting strawberries in a pitcher of water, lemons, orange slices, mint. The cucumber mint water is also really refreshing. All these different slices of fruit that you can add to a pitcher of water, put it in the fridge, let it kind of, get absorbed in there and then drink it later after it's, really got that flavor is so good. And the other thing that I have them convert to after they've been stuck on coffee or soda is tea. So a lot of people will say, okay, I can drink iced tea. It's like a little bit more acceptable to them than just plain water in the beginning. And so it's kind of like weaning off of the sodas. And of course we're talking about not sugary tea, but
right. Not soda, sweet tea. That stuff is nasty.
Exactly.
How about green tea? I'm assuming that you're talking more about green tea.
Yeah, and sometimes it's a shift. So they'll start with black tea and then go to green tea and then to herbal tea. So for most people that have a habit like that that's so strong, it's a lot more successful for them if we do baby steps. So we have to go to black tea, then green tea, then herbal tea, then water. We just try to go from soda to water. A lot of people can't do it, and then they just give up, and then they forget it.
Well, that makes sense, and I hadn't even thought about that because I've always drank water from the hose, from the faucet, from wherever I can find it, I drink water. And I love tea, but I want my tea black, and I want it completely unsugared. Most people won't drink it that way, but I like it. But I admit that I get, and I'm not a big coffee drinker, but if I drink too much tea, I get the jitters. I mean, that stuff is loaded with caffeine.
Yeah, it doesn't have as much as coffee, but it does have a lot of caffeine. So, for people that are having sleep issues or they say, well, they just can't fall asleep, we really have to also look at what are they drinking throughout the day. Are they drinking iced tea all day? Are they drinking coffee at dinner or after dinner? When you go out to eat sometimes at a restaurant for dinner and you have your meal and then they ask you, do you want coffee after? For me, if I did that, I would not be able to sleep. I don't know how some people can have coffee after dinner, but it's something to consider because a lot of people are having sleep issues, going back to sleep. And there's just so many little things that they could be doing during the day that could be contributing to that. So we have to look at those things as well.
Yeah, I agree with you about the coffee. It's not something I drink much of, but when I do, I know I have to do it in the morning and not anytime after 12. Okay, so let's go to food now. Look, it's hard to eat healthy. It's hard. One of my favorite grocery stores here in Louisiana is called Rouse's. It's a homegrown grocery store. I think they've only got 7 or 8 stores, but they're beautiful. And they source, their seafood departments, and there's a lot of organic food. I mean, they have a boat down on the Gulf, which is only about 15 miles away, as a crow flies, and they're bringing in giant shrimp. They're bringing in, all kinds of freshly caught, wild-caught seafoods. So I tend to eat a lot of that. But I know the point I wanted to make. There's a big division in this store. When you walk in one end, it's you know, the lighting is low. They have all of these great displays. Everything looks healthy. It's, they've got organic stuff. It's beautiful. And then you go to the grocery side of the store. The light is much harsher. It's got, you know, it looks like a regular grocery store. And everything is in packages. I avoid that part of the store. I will go over there for canned goods, but I try not to go over there. So I guess my question is, how can we eat healthy? You know, I don't leave my home very often. I'm always here in my office. But how do people who are out and about, or even like me who are working from home, how do we eat healthy? I mean, do we schedule it? Do we create lists? What is the best thing to do to get on that healthier food path?
Well, definitely shopping at stores like that is one of the first and best things you can do. If you're in an area that has farmers markets, shop at the farmers markets. If your farmers markets are only in season for people that live maybe on the, in the Northeast, you know, when they're open, when they're in season, shop there because that's going to be the freshest, most locally sourced food you can have. For people that have grocery stores like yours, shop there because locally sourced food is going to be the best food for you. Our bodies were made to eat the food that's in our local environment. So we weren't created to have all this food that's shipped in from other countries or from other states or from other areas. So whenever you can eat the foods from your local ecosystem, it's going to have a better health benefit to you. And that's why when, like in the summer months, certain fruits and vegetables are in season and you see them everywhere, that's what your body is supposed to be eating at that time. So try to eat fruits and vegetables that are in season and that are sourced locally. So that's the first thing. The second thing we talked about a little bit already was trying to schedule your meals at regular intervals so that you have like a 3 to 4 hour gap at least between your meals so that your body has a chance to digest all the food from your last meal before you're adding more food to the system. So when you have partially digested and you're adding more food, it kind of confuses your digestive system and it can cause different digestive problems like gas and bloating and pain and things. So for people that have a lot of digestive issues, you know, look at that. Are you spacing your meals out? The third thing would be kind of in a little bit in alignment with number two, but looking at the times of day that you eat so that you're not eating too late in the evening so that your food can be digested before you go to bed. The next step would be what you were asking about, kind of preparing for the week ahead of time. So if you're someone that just goes to the grocery store once a week, you want to think about your different meals you're going to prepare for that week ahead of time. And that way you're not at the last minute thinking, okay, I don't have anything, so I'm just going to go out and grab a burger, or I'm just going to go out and get some different fried foods because you don't have things prepared. So prepare ahead of time for the week. And along with that is meal prep your food for the day all at once so that it'll be so easy when you go to grab your dinner, you already have it prepared. That's a good tip for busy moms who are running around doing a lot of things throughout the day. Oh no, now they got to prepare lunch, but their kids are, you know, needing them for this. And so maybe it's easy to grab some prepackaged things. So if they could do their food prep for the next day, the night before, or in the morning for the whole day, so kind of get all your breakfast stuff, your lunch stuff, and your dinner stuff ready so that it's just right there and easy to use. That way you're not just grabbing things that aren't healthy. So
I love those. I was writing those down as you were talking. One of the questions, and this has always been a problem for me, I love organic foods. I do. They don't last long. They just don't. Do you have any tips on how to kind of save your organic tomatoes or cucumbers or whatever it is that came from the farmer's market so that 3 days later you don't look at it and it's either wilted or it's already started decaying? I have a kind of an ongoing problem with that. I have to be very careful about what I buy and what quantities because I don't want to throw it away.
Yeah, that's true. I've had the same issue because when I go to the farmer's market, I want to buy everything, right? It all looks so great and so delicious.
I know.
And
for the first day, you're like,
woo!
Yeah.
But then, you know, 3 or 4 days later, a lot of it is not lasting because they're not putting all of those food preservatives in their food. So yeah, you do have to look at how much you need, how much to buy at a time. So for some people, they might need to go shopping for groceries twice a week so that they can have, you know, the stuff that only lasts 2 or 3 days and then go again in the middle of the week. So you do have to look at that. Know which foods you can keep in the refrigerator and which ones you can keep out on the counter, because some people are putting things in the refrigerator that should be on the counter and vice versa. So kind of do a little bit of research on the different foods that you buy and the best way
tomatoes.
To store them.
Don't refrigerate your tomatoes. I've done it forever. And all of a sudden I read somewhere that, you know, you just leave them on the counter. I went, I'll be darned. It worked. Who knew? I mean, you know, my mama put them in the fridge. I put them in the fridge. I was destroying my tomatoes.
Right.
Okay, so can you talk a bit about the distinction between fresh vegetables and organic vegetables? I find they taste very different, but the storage life on both is very different.
Yeah, it's very different. I know when, like, for example, when you go to the grocery store and you see those baby carrots in those plastic baggies, and I see so many people serving them when I go to different events or to someone's house for a party. If you buy a bag of those and you put them in your fridge, I'm sure some people have noticed they can last for months. And that's
they
not
can.
Normal.
And I have some in my fridge.
Know?
I love those things. Crap.
Yeah, they shouldn't last that long. They're putting so much stuff in them. So, yeah.
I have noticed that.
I know it's so easy to just grab them, but definitely they taste different and they last different. So we just have to kind of be aware of that when we're shopping for our food.
Crumb. And I have a whole bag. I put some last night in my salad. I love those things. But you know what I'm going to do, just because we're having this conversation, the next time I'm in Rouse's, they have organic carrots. You know the ones that you always see on Bugs Bunny, the big carrot with the, you know, green stalk hanging out.
Yeah.
I'm going to buy a bunch of those and see how different, because I haven't before. I've always just bought the babies. So I'm going to switch off and see what happens with those. I'll let you know.
Yeah, and do you make juices? Do you have a juicer?
I have a juicer, and I have a Nutribullet. I love my Nutribullet.
Yeah, so one of the things that we do when we're juicing is we don't cut the greens off of the carrots and throw them away. We throw them in our juice to have some more of the greens in our juices.
Mm-hmm.
So
I do that with my Nutribullet. One of my favorite Nutribullet drinks is, and I'm not even sure how I come to create this. I just had stuff and I threw it in there, but I will buy the big lemon, you know, the big lemons, the ones that have the thick skins, not those little skinny ones that you can't peel. And I'll cut the tips off, you know, the ends of them, because they're kind of pointy. And then I scrub them real good. And then I just cut them up in little eighths, you know, little pieces. I toss that in the Nutribullet. I may grate a little bit of ginger in there. I add parsley, a good handful of parsley from my little garden outside, and a lot of water, and I just chew it up until it's drinkable. And I put a little bit of stevia in it, and that's it. And I'm telling you, it is so good. And you look at it, it's green, but if you're tasting it, you're closing your eyes and tasting it, it tastes like fresh lemonade. It's just green. And it's a little bit thick because it's got seeds and all. It's got the skin in there, but it's really delicious. And I'll drink that on and off all day long.
Yeah, there's so many ways to experiment with a juicer or a Nutribullet. Just start being creative and start making up your own recipes. You never know, you know, you might come up with a really good recipe, but I know that there's so many good juicing and smoothie recipes online. I have some. I know the green smoothies girls have some. So just really experiment, and that's another way to get more greens and veggies into your diet if you're struggling with, you know, I'm just tired of salads or something like that.
Right. Well, I don't eat breakfast, but I will do that. You know, I will start up, I'll fire up my little Nutribullet, and I'll drink whatever it is that I'm going to drink, a little bit of it, because my stomach really is not ready for any kind of anything but water in the morning. So, yeah, maybe half a cup or something, but I find it's helpful, and it tastes good. So let's move on to exercise. That's a biggie for so many people. We're busy, you know, moms are running around with their kids and they're taking care of everybody home and probably working outside the home. And there's people like me who don't really leave home very often because I don't have to, but I don't stop. I seriously don't stop. So how can we get some good, healthy exercise rhythms going?
Okay, so like you said, exercise is a big topic. And there's a lot of different groups of people to address when you talk about exercise, because we have people that haven't exercised in years. They just, maybe when they got out of high school and finished with their PE classes, they just never exercised anymore. Or people that stopped exercising for some reason, maybe they had a baby, maybe they had an injury, or they're just commute schedule with work just got too crazy, so they just stopped exercising. So there's that group. Then there's the group that's super busy, like busy moms, entrepreneurs, people that have a really long work schedule that are finding hard time to fit it into their day. And then there's, you know, maybe kind of the rest of us who sometimes exercise and sometimes don't. So the people that are already exercising, we probably don't even need to address them because they're already doing it. So out of these different groups, when we're trying to fit it into our schedule, the first thing I have them start with, especially for people who haven't been exercising in a long time, is I want them to exercise in the morning, so before breakfast. So you get up, you drink your water. I recommend hydrating with at least 2 to 4 glasses of water first thing in the morning, kind of flushes out your system, gets everything moving again. And even for people that are waking up with stiff joints and kind of sore muscles as we get older, drinking that water in the morning is really important. So get that water in and then do your exercise before your breakfast and the rest of your morning routine. So again, for a lot of people that are really busy, they might say, how am I going to get my exercise in the morning? That's my busiest time. So I start them off really, really slow with maybe 1 or 2 minutes. And again, these are for people who haven't exercised in years. So to telling them to do 5 or 10 minutes even is a big chore. So I'll start them off with 1 or 2 minutes, and they can just do jumping jacks in their room. They don't even have to go outside. They don't have to go to a gym. Do jumping jacks or jogging in place for 1 or 2 minutes. Do that for a week. See how you feel. You're going to already start noticing changes. You're going to feel a little bit more energy. You're going to feel more, heated, like your body temperature will go up, which is actually, you know, what we want it to happen with our exercise. And then I move them up to 5 minutes and then gradually get them up to 20 minutes. So when they say they're too busy to exercise, well, everyone can fit 1 or 2 minutes into their schedule just really quickly. And so once they build up to the 5 or 10 or 20 minutes, they've gotten to a point where they're really feeling good about it. They're feeling good about themselves. They're feeling the change in their energy throughout the day. And it doesn't seem to really be a problem with getting that 20 minutes in the morning. So that's really what I do when it's a struggle.
And like you say, you can do that anywhere. I mean, you can do it in the bathroom at work if you need to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what the other thing that's really... Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Go.
I was just going to say, another thing that's really important with that is to make sure that people do what they like to do. So if you hate running, I'm not going to tell you to go run. If you just want to do a dance break, dance with your favorite music for 5 minutes. Whatever it is that you really like to do is the best exercise for you to do, because that's going to keep you motivated and get you started. And then once it becomes a regular habit, you can start switching it up and trying different things like weights and yoga and running and power walking and walking around the block and all that kind of stuff. But in the beginning, start with what you like.
Exactly. One of my favorite pieces of equipment, I have my gym is in my home. It's in my garage, actually. And I have several pieces of equipment, treadmill and this, that, and the other. I have the big machine that kind of came with a Total Home Gym, which I love. But my favorite piece of equipment, and I've had it for years, is a rebounder. I love that thing. And I was watching the Tony Robbins documentary on Netflix this weekend, I Am Not Your Guru. And I saw him jumping on a rebounder. I went, aha, I was right. That's my favorite piece of equipment. But you know, he's on that rebounder at home, and then he gets on the rebounder before he goes on stage. And I'm telling you, if you have access to one of those things, they're so much fun. You get to bounce around like a little kid, and it oxygenates you. And they're just, I love mine. I'm on it all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I just got one because now that it's getting so hot, I like to walk and run outside, and it's getting so hot that I just decided that, you know what, I'm going to try one of these rebounders inside where it's cool so I can get my exercise in without getting too hot.
Right.
So I like
it. Well, I keep my, I have a covered porch in my backyard, and I keep it out there in the cooler months, which we don't have many of, being in the deep south. But then I bring it indoors, and it's in my office. And literally, I mean, I'm at my computer all of the time, but I'm like a jack-in-the-box. I'm up and down, up and down, up and down, because I have found over time that my focus suffers terribly if I'm staring at a monitor for more than 15 or 20 minutes. So I have to, every 15, 20, sometimes 30 minutes, if I'm really concentrating, I have to get up. I get up, I move, I go throw a load of laundry in, I talk with the cats, I go out and play with squirrels with the dog, and I'm on that rebounder. And I may only be on there for 5 or 10 minutes, but it gets me going again for the next bout of whatever it is that I need to be doing. So when you get used to yours and start using, I'd love to hear how it works for you, because I've had mine for years.
Yeah, I had one a long time ago. When I was a nanny, when I was in college, the family that I worked with, they had one, and they used it every day. And so when I was watching the kids, when they were watching their TV shows or whatever, I would jump on that thing. And I loved it. So I said, you know what, I'm going to get one of those. And I'm really liking it.
Yeah. I think, and I'm not sure, so, don't anybody, take this as given, but I believe that those were created for NASA to combat weightlessness for the astronauts when they got back home. Because their muscles were a bit atrophied after being, weightless for so long. I think that's the story. But they're fun, and they really do make you feel bad. I mean, when I start getting a bad headache, I make it a point to go get on that rebounder, and the headache's gone. Drink water, obviously, but, drink water and bounce around a little bit. So, and one of my cats will get, when the rebounder's outside, I have a big Maine Coon that lives in the backyard. He does not like to come in the house, so I baby-proof the backyard so he can't get out. And he lives in the backyard, and he will get on that rebounder and just sit there while I'm bouncing. It's the weirdest thing. Doesn't bother him at all.
So,
I'm guessing it makes him healthy, too. I don't know.
That's so great that, you have a symptom, you feel your headache coming on, and instead of reaching for aspirin, you know that what works for you is getting on that rebounder. That's the perfect example of us listening to our bodies signals and to do healthy habits instead of, what's been so common recently with prescription.
Yeah. It is. And I worry about some of my friends who have literally shoebox fulls of medication. And it can't be healthy. It's not natural. Cannot be healthy, but they're going to do what they want to do.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's talk about, do you have any, I have so many questions, I'm like, I've got to ask her this and that.
Okay.
I know that it's easy to get overwhelmed. Look, I get overwhelmed every day, multiple times a day. It's the path of an entrepreneur. I don't know if you saw that graphic I put up on Facebook the other day, but it's like this zigzag chart. You up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down. And you start out, go, oh, this is great. Oh, this is working. Oh, crud, I suck. It's just, we do this all day long. And it's exhausting.
Yeah.
And we get overwhelmed. And it's not just us. It's everybody. So do you have any suggestions or even case studies that you can share where you've helped people just, learn to get the things done that are critical, that are priority, without feeling totally overwhelmed and just lost?
Yeah, that's a good question, because people in every walk of life can fall into this category, whether it's a mom that has so many things to get done, but then their baby's crying and their baby and their kids need them, or if it's an entrepreneur like us who have more than one business and we're trying to, balance our time. So the first thing is obviously getting enough rest and making sure that we're, going to bed early enough so that we can have that sleep that we need. Obviously keeping ourselves hydrated, like we talked about, and eating properly so that your mind and your brain can really, function at its optimal, and same with your body. And I love what you talked about of taking those breaks, movement breaks, getting up from the computer so that you're not getting, you know, your body's not getting tight and feeling all the stress. But when we have that stress and the overwhelm feeling, we have to prioritize our tasks. And especially when you're running multiple businesses and doing so many things, if you don't do that, you're going to fall behind. You're going to get really unorganized, and the overwhelm is just going to compound itself. So really just prioritizing your tasks, only focusing on one thing at a time. You know, a good book that I recommend is The One Thing. It really talks about just focusing on one thing at a time, trying to multitask, because, you know, I think most of us know that there's been studies now that show when you're multitasking, you're really not giving 100% to any of the tasks that you're doing. And making changes that are really small, like the baby steps we talked about, making small incremental changes in your habits so that you're not trying to do, you know, too much at once. So, for example, if you're going to change your bedtime from midnight to 10 p.m., don't try to do it in one day. You're just going to end up laying there awake in bed for 2 hours. So make small changes. So if you're going to bed at midnight, start changing your bedtime to 11:45 for a whole week. Your body will get used to it, and it will be a much easier transition. And then the following week, switch it to 11:30. And just do that gradually with different things. So with your bedtime, with your dinner time, with your exercise. So just make small changes in different areas, and that's going to have like a compound effect, and you're going to feel so much better, and that overwhelm is going to not feel so heavy. And then one of the other big things is slowing down. You've heard that phrase before, slow down to speed up. So you have to slow down before you can make progress. And that, what that really means is giving yourself time and space to not be doing something, giving yourself breaks, scheduling short little times to meditate or to sit in silence, as we call it. For some people, that might mean taking a walk around the block quietly without listening to business podcasts or without listening to music, just, you know, taking in the fresh air and just giving yourself a little bit of space to not be doing anything, quote unquote, productive, or sitting in silence and meditating. For people that struggle with it, one of the things they can start with is guided meditation, something like that that will just let your mind relax and give yourself the time to really decompress for a few minutes, even if it's only 3 minutes or even 1 minute. Studies have shown that even 1 minute of meditation a day can actually lower people's blood pressure, stress levels, cortisol levels, and can start having positive effects on their health. So if you're doing it for even 1 minute a day or 3 minutes or 5 minutes, so much for you in terms of your stress and relaxation so that you won't get into that feeling of overwhelm.
And see, I'm so glad you brought, I actually had written down, ask her about meditation, because I struggle with it. My little monkey brain kicks in and I start making the grocery list for Thanksgiving. Could be July, doesn't matter. I'm mentally making my turkey list. It's bizarre. I have found that if I'm walking the dog very early in the morning, which I don't do very often because she has this giant backyard that she plays in and she doesn't necessarily need to be walked, and when I do walk, it's 5:30 in the morning, so she's not socializing because nobody else is out there. But I do find on the rare occasion that I do that, I'm almost meditating. It's like a walking meditation, but I don't do it often enough for it to be helpful. So when you say guided meditation, what does that mean exactly?
So guided meditations are perfect for people that struggle with meditation and quieting their mind. I mean, it's very, very common for the grocery list type of effects to happen when you're trying to sit and meditate. So I want you to know that's totally normal. It happens to almost everybody, even experienced meditators. So guided meditations are a good way to start when you struggle with that, because what it is, there's some apps that you can put on your phone, or if you're sitting at your desk, you can just go on YouTube and find guided meditations. And what it is it's someone talking you through a meditation. It could be 5 minutes, 10 minutes. There's all different length ones. There's longer ones. And it's just someone, just pick one that you like that has a soothing voice. And it's someone just guiding you through. So you'll just close your eyes and sit. You can even lay down. You don't have to sit with your legs crossed and all that, but just sit quietly somewhere and listen to it. And it will be someone just talking to you. And so that's what allows your brain to not be thinking of the grocery list, because your brain is actually busy listening to the voice of the other person. And then the other person is telling you, okay, close your eyes, breathe deeply, take in an inhale. And so you're actually listening to their instructions at the same time. And if they're telling you to breathe, you're breathing. And so between the two things that you're doing, which is listening to their voice and doing their instructions, your brain won't think of anything else because it's already doing two things. And that will allow you by the end of it to be in a relaxed meditative state, because by the end you're so relaxed. I actually used guided meditations to get over a bout of insomnia that I had. So I would lay in bed awake, like you were saying, about your mind. It would just start racing and thinking of all the things I had to do or what did I not get done. And so I started using those at night when I went to sleep, and I would put that on, and it would be about an 8 to 10 minute meditation. And every single time I would fall asleep before it finished. So for me, that was a huge success, because I was probably laying awake for up to an hour sometimes, not able to fall asleep. So,
Yeah, me too. I'm making all kinds of plans, and I'm plotting world domination, and I just don't go to sleep.
Yeah.
That's scary. Yeah. Do you have any meditations, any guided meditations that you like most that you can recommend?
Well, the app that I use is called Omvana, so it's Omvana, and it's a free app. And when you click on the app, it opens up, and there's a whole bunch of meditations on there that are free, and then there's some that are paid. But you can pick and choose whichever one you like. There's some that say, sounds of nature, or this one is good to help you fall asleep, and so you can kind of scroll through and see which ones you might want to try. That's the app I use. I know there's another good app called Headspace that a lot of people use. If I'm at my computer, sometimes I'll just go on YouTube and I'll find one from Deepak Chopra, because I always love listening to his different meditations. He has a bunch of them on his website, or on YouTube, I should say. So those are the different ones that I've used.
I'm going to definitely have to try that, because I'm listening to you, I'm realizing that I have some probably erroneous ideas about meditation. You know, I always thought you had to kind of sit up and close your eyes and, do all this stuff, really focus on your mind and not worry about the 20-pound turkey that is 6 months down the road. And it just never was working for me, but I love that you say you can lay down, because, I've got this wonderful, I call it my little hidden garden in my backyard, but it's really behind my pecan trees, and the pecan tree branches, the branches back there almost go to the ground, and I've left them that way because underneath that really shady area, I've got this wonderful double chaise lounge, and I go back there, and it literally is like being in a treehouse, but I'm on the ground, and it's so peaceful, and it's so quiet. And I will go back there and I'll try to meditate, and I wind up either going to sleep, which is okay because I won't get sunburnt. I cannot get sunburnt. I'm too light complected for that. But, after a while I'm thinking, oh, geez, I need to get in there and work on that website. So I have not really tried just getting on there, kicking the thing back into a reclining position and seeing what happens. I mean, I've tried to meditate, but I've been trying to do it sitting up and, all the ways that you think you're supposed to do it. So guess what I'm doing this weekend?
Yeah, that's great. That is one of the things that I teach people when we first start talking about meditation. I tell them, that don't think that meditation means sitting in lotus position with your legs crossed and your eyes closed in a room by yourself with no noise for 30 minutes. Some people
that's
do meditate.
That's what comes to mind.
But that's not what meditation is for most of us. For most of us, it might be 5 minutes or 10 minutes or 3 minutes. We might be laid down. I have a few friends that can't do it sitting up. Their mind races whatever they're doing. So when they lay down, they can do it. Then lay down and do it, whatever works for you. Because it's really not about being perfect. It's about just relaxing and getting into that quiet state.
Well, now that you're saying that, in a quiet space, I'm thinking that I almost have to try it out there, because if I'm in the house and I lay down on the couch, I'm instantly, you know, I'm buried under a cat or two or three. And that's distracting because you want to talk to your cat and go, oh, I love you, and you'll pet them, and then, you know, your monkey brain takes off. So I'm thinking my little hidey hole out there, my reading nook, is the place to do it.
Yeah.
Early in the morning, before the humidity gets here.
Exactly, in Louisiana. That's a great point, though, that you make, because another thing that helps a lot of people is having what we call a sacred space to do it, so a space that you do it every time. So if your space is outside on that chaise lounge in the shade, then that's your sacred space. Your body will get used to doing it there and getting into the habit of, okay, we're going to relax because we're in our sacred space. So if you have a space in your house, use for that and do it there every time, whether it's a reclining chair or a meditation cushion that some people have, or a favorite rug that's like really soft and fluffy that you like sitting on or laying on. Whatever your sacred space is, if that's where you want to do your meditation, it will probably help you to do it in the same place every time.
Shower. I do my best thinking in the shower.
And
a lot of people love moving it.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say bathtub. I mean, when I get in the tub, I'm in there for an hour or better. But, yeah, that's my relaxation place. And, you know, I've got a spa tub. I put in Epsom salts, and, I mean, it's wonderful. And I go in there for the duration. I'm not in and out. That's where I go to just decompress. So I'm thinking if I need a place in the house to meditate, my tub is it. And I've never tried, oddly enough.
Yeah. I used to always do mine in the tub, too. And a lot of people like to do a moving meditation, so they do their walking one. Tai Chi is another, it's a type of moving meditation. You've probably seen people doing it, and it's such slow, deliberate movements, and they're not talking, they're quiet, even when they're doing it in a group. It's like it's a moving, silent meditation. So there's a lot of ways to do it.
Well, and that leads me to my next question. A lot of my clients are in the health and fitness industry, and I'm hearing from a lot of them about breath work, and they take it very, very seriously. I mean, you're breathing in, breathing out, how to do it. Is this something that you help your patients with?
Yeah, that's another thing that's a really good point, because, for example, in yoga, the focus is on the breath, and so it doesn't really matter as much how you're positioned. I mean, it does matter in so that you don't get injured, but you don't have to do the pose perfectly, but we really want to make sure that everyone's breathing right. So breath is really important. Even in some yoga classes, they'll do 5 or 10 or 20 minutes of breath work before they even start doing any poses, because it really puts you in a deep meditative state as well. So breathing properly for the different exercises you're doing. Sometimes people are breathing wrong. You know, they're breathing out of their mouth and they should be breathing out of their nose. So that's also another part of it. And when you get into the guided meditations, most of the time, one of the first things they do is have you focus on your breath, because that can even be a meditation, just counting in to a count of 4 as you're inhaling, and then you pause for a count of 2, and then you exhale for a count of 4. And then just doing that can be a type of meditation. So there's so much we could talk about with breath work, but it's a very important thing to do when you're exercising or meditating or doing your yoga.
I'm prone to headaches. I have been all of my life, but I have noticed as I've gotten older and more attuned to what's going on with me that if I will drink water and I will start breathing deeper, because I don't know what it is, and we get busy on things. You know, I'm building a website and I'm very focused on the font, or I'm very focused on, you know, making sure that this particular page is working as, you know, well as it's supposed to on across all devices. And I will find myself getting a bit of a headache, and I think, okay, first thing, water. And the second thing is, you're not breathing, you idiot. I will realize that I'm shallow breathing, and I will have to stop, stand up, and really pull in some deep breaths, let them in, let them out. And it does get rid of the headache. Those two things are very, very helpful.
Yeah, it's true. And for stress management and for overwhelm, sometimes all you need to do is slow down and take 3 deep breaths. You know, that's why in even, you know, in anger management classes, it's one of the first things they teach people is to stop, breathe, count to 10, you know, things like that, because it really does calm things down, calms your mind down, and gets you centered again.
You know, listening to us talk today, everything that we're talking about, we already know at some level, don't we? So how did we get so far away from being healthy and moving and drinking water and breathing? What happened?
I think just our busy Western lifestyles have really just taken over, and we forgot the basics. And that's why, you know, getting back to basics is so important. And like we both said, that we already know most of these things: eat healthy, get sleep, get exercise. But we're not doing it as a society and as a community. We're not doing these things, and it's taking over, and it's affecting our health in so many different ways. And we're aging not as gracefully as we want to, and we're putting on weight that we don't want to put on as a society. So we really need to get back to the basics. We need to slow down a little, not worry about getting every single thing done today, because we can get things done at our own pace. And that's when we're going to start making changes. But we do need to slow down and get back to basics.
I love that. One thing I wanted to ask you about, and I should have asked you earlier in the program, but how do you raise your energy at the end of the day? We, you know, so many of us come home exhausted. We're busy. If you're married with children, or you walk in the door, you're not married with children, but you walk in the door and your pets are going, "Where have you been, Mom?" You know, we always have something to do when we get home. We can't just kind of flop down on the couch and turn on the TV. And that lack of energy can really go until it's time for you to go to bed and you're just exhausted and then you can't sleep. So what can people do to really raise their energy when they're just thinking they're done at the end of the day?
Well, that's such a great question, because almost all of the things that we talked about this morning are going to actually raise your energy: going to bed earlier, eating an earlier dinner, eating at the right times of day, drinking your water, getting your exercise in the morning, taking time out to meditate, even a couple minutes a day. All those things are going to raise your energy, and especially if you're doing them on a regular basis and make habits out of them. But in terms of, let's say today you come home and you're tired, one of the things you could do is after dinner is move your body. And it doesn't mean doing a vigorous run, not like a really power workout, but something like going around, taking a walk after dinner, or doing something in the house that isn't too strenuous, like some gentle yoga, something that you could do to just get your body moving to help your food digest a little bit. Because a lot of times, it's as soon as we eat our dinner, then we're just feel heavy and we just want to lay down on the couch or something. And so if we can do something to move our body after we've eaten our dinner, that's going to do a lot for your energy, giving you that last bit of energy you need to last you throughout the day.
Perfect. Listen, I remember when you had launched your shoe line, but I remember in the mastermind, you were really getting busy with that. I mean, I think that was your purpose for being in there, if I'm not mistaken. And I would love for you to tell people more about where they can find your shoes, because they look, I mean, I am a shoe addict, trust me. Looks like Nordstrom's threw up in my closet. So tell people where they can find comfortable shoes and still look gorgeous.
Yes, thank you for bringing that up. Our shoe line is called 34 Minutes, because studies have shown that after 34 minutes, most women in high heels, that's when the pain sets in. So we wanted to remind them of that point so that they can look for more comfortable shoes like ours. And there's some other really good brands out there. Not a lot, but there's a few that address these points. And so ours are called 34 Minute Shoes, and that's the name of our website, 34minuteshoes.com. You can find our shoes there. We sell them online. We have our online boutique. And we're also on Facebook at 34 Minutes, so that's where you can find us. We're also on Amazon, so any of those places you can find us.
Great. You have a couple of other websites, I think. Tell people where they are.
Yeah, for my local community, my podiatry practice is elmonifootdoctor.com. And for the health coaching and all of these different tips we've been talking about today, I have juicing recipes and things like that on my other website, which is drmichelle.com, and that's Michelle with one L. And I'll put the links up under the link to this show. So thanks.
Well, thank you. Michelle, thanks so much for being with me here today. It's been wonderful chatting with you. And I am going to meditate this weekend underneath my tree, and I will email you and let you know what happened with that. I mean, I'm actually really looking forward to it. And it's not something – meditation has always been one of those things, I know I need to do it, but I'm actually looking forward to doing this. I may do it today if it's not too hot out there. Listen, I know our audience enjoyed the takeaways as much as I did, and thank you again. The show will be available for download in about an hour. And you can also find us in iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Michelle Summers Cologne. And I will see you next week. Michelle, have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too, Denise.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeonthweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.